Good evening, everybody. This is the Fakeologist speaking. You hear the theme music? That's the theme music for the show, Mama Gama, from the Alan Parsons Project. It is Monday, August 15th, 2022, the Ides of August. Oedipus Augustus. That's Latin. That's my favorite class in grade 9, Latin. I didn't know it at the time, but got to be the most useful class I ever took, Latin. I don't there's a reason why they don't teach Latin, and I think I heard our guest, Lynn Ertel, say you made a noise when I said Latin, Lynn. Hello, welcome.
Yeah, we should restore the teaching of Latin and Greek.
Oh my God, yes. Oh.
Education. And when I was in high school, they basically had two kinds of diplomas, what they called an academic diploma and then something called a business diploma.
Mm-hmm.
The business diploma was, in a sense, for people who weren't going on to college.
Right.
And that would be boys who would maybe be going on to trade school.
Mm-hmm.
Or girls who were going on to do essentially secretarial work. The business meant that they had to learn stenography, typing.
Yeah.
Right. And so there was no requirement for them. The requirements were different for a business diploma. Now, where I went to high school, in a fairly prosperous neighborhood, middle class, I would say, everyone was the standard was in 1969 when I graduated from high school that, you had to go to, if you didn't really go to college, it was considered sort of a, how do I put it? People who didn't make it to college, get accepted at college, were sort of considered on a lower rung. That wouldn't be the case. Now it's completely different, but.
Yeah.
The deal there was you had to score well enough on your SATs and you had to get good enough grades to make it into a college. And if your grades were good enough, you got a scholarship. Maybe you made it into one of the better universities. This is, again, in 1969.
Ah, I was wondering if you're going to give us the year. Okay. I was barely born.
One of the requirements for an there were certain requirements for an academic diploma. And one of them involved, I think, at least 2 or 3 years of a foreign language, at least one foreign language. So I basically began taking Spanish at the earliest possible moment, which was the eighth grade. And then I went on and I took 2-3 years more Spanish in college, and I retained some fluency. When I lived in New York City, for example, I was speaking Spanish on a fairly regular basis. In Puerto Rican neighborhoods, among Dominicans. So, it was, and of course now I happen to think that the United States should be bilingual, as yep. Canada is bilingual, right? Canada's bilingual.
Yes, yes it is. And we have less reason to be bilingual because the French, the Quebecois in Quebec, it's not a high percentage. I think the second most spoken language in Canada is probably Mandarin, or what's the other one? Cantonese, or maybe Hindi. French is way down there, so they only got that designation because of historical reasons, really.
Right. This is before the tremendous influx of Asian immigrants to Canada and the United States.
Yeah, probably, yeah. Yeah, I agree. You should have a Spanish as an official language, probably. And it really is a de facto official language or unofficial language, isn't it? Everything is translated everywhere in many official documents.
Right. I had cousins, for example, and everybody was very proud of them because they were good at languages and they got jobs at the National Security Agency. And so...
That's a good reason.
My parents said, you should definitely, and they, as it happened, the languages that they mastered were Spanish and Portuguese.
Yeah, very close. Very close languages.
So the parents, my parents, had the attitude of that the really the dominant language in the Western Hemisphere was Spanish. principally because of Mexico and Latin America. And therefore, it made sense for me to learn as much Spanish as possible. So they were very much, they said, you should take Spanish. You should take several years of it. You should get good with it. You should be, you know. And that was, in 1969. And I think even more the case now. But one way or another, making students take a foreign language teaches them how to think better.
Yeah, oh yeah.
It teaches them the general principles of grammar. And, of course, no language is better for learning grammar than Latin.
Yeah, oh
because
yeah.
Latin is it's the basis of most European languages, and even has a strong presence in English. I think most of our nouns in English come from Latin.
Latin, yeah, Latin and Greek. It's fantastic. Yeah, yeah. So yeah, you gotta learn Latin. Hey, Lynn, Lynn, you have so much information. I have to break in here and there to get a couple of site announcements. I just want to get you on the call right away so you can comment or interrupt at any time. I just want to say that I went to the P.O. box. We have a P.O. box, fakeologist.com/contact. If you want to make a donation or send a letter or send a bag of goodies or don't send anything dirty or nasty, because the postmaster there, he's a angry Persian guy. He scares people, so I think he handles all my mail, so make sure you don't send anything negative. But anyway,
angry Persian. He could be a terrorist.
No, I love Persians. They're some of the smartest people in the world. Actually, guy I work with is a Persian, and he just went back to Tehran actually, and he gave me a report. Things aren't that great there in terms of for poor people anyway, like everywhere else. But I got a nice letter from Jacksonville, Florida, and it's from Anonymous. I just see the postal stamp. I'll read the letter. Keep up the great work. You clearly can spot fakes. Now it might be time to search for the truth. Sign nobody. That's it. Blank letter. But in it was a banknote, and it says 50 euro. I don't know what a euro looks like. I guess I should look it up. But I think it's a real thing. 50 euro. Have you ever seen a euro banknote, Lynn?
I never have. The last time I was in Europe was 1980. Well, I guess I was there. I was in Greece in the mid-90s. But the last time I was in Europe was before the euro. So we had to convert, you know, dollars to lira or francs or Deutsche Mark.
Yeah. You know. Well, I'll probably take a picture of it and then convert it to Canuck bucks, because I think it's worth about 66, nice number, Canadian dollars. And as much as I like collecting dollar bills, I'm afraid I'd lose them. Just put them in the bank. So thank you so much. I think I've got correspondence from Jacksonville, Florida before, and I recognize the writing from past donations. So whoever you are, thank you so much. I don't even know if you're in Jacksonville. Maybe that's just the collection spot for that area. I think that's where fakeologist.com server is. I think it's in Jacksonville, but I'm not sure. And I also got a nice note from Jonah. Jonah was the blind man. Dear Professor Ab or Professor Fakeologist, thank you for the wonderful interview you did with me. It was fantastic, and I really had a good time. I think you really brought out the best in me, and I'm so glad you enjoyed my parody of American Pie. Thank you so much. Best and real, not fake wishes, Jonah. And he even signed his name, Jonah. And, of course, don't forget he's blind, so how the hell would he know what a character looks like, a letter, but it's legible. And then, of course, on the back it said, Dear Ab, Jonah signed this and wrote the words. I just printed it and put it on this card. Thanks for all you do, Nicole Manley. So what a wonderful family that is. John Manley is the man who wrote the book, Much Ado About Corona, and he's coming back. I said, come back. And if you look on the schedule for this month, it looks like he's coming back on Wednesday, and he's going to bring an artist type guy who did some artwork for him on the show. So, yeah, John's coming back. I think I spelled his name right. Manley. Is there there's an E in there. Oops, sorry. I'll fix that now. So that's in the calendar at fakeologist.com/live. There's a calendar there, and you can see that we have a full week. I booked a full week today. And of course,
congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. And I called Lynn at the last moment. Lynn, I think Lynn should be a regular as well. I should just put you on a regular monthly rotation if you're interested, because you are following all the events of the day from Baltimore, Maryland. And you've been doing this so long that you have a wealth of knowledge. And I know you call into talk shows, but I think you're worthy of being just a regular guest if you're interested.
Yeah, I'm available for that. I appreciate that. I view it as I'm a student taking the class. That's sort of how.
No, you should be the teacher by now. Absolutely. I'm no teacher. I'm just the school. I bring in the teachers if I can.
One question I have about the Manleys is this.
Yeah. Yeah, Dirty Benny says Lynn should be a regular guest. See? He had the same thought.
I appreciate that. I know, is Dirty Benny the one who's into MMA? Because I'm into MMA.
Oh, he's in a lot of stuff. I think he's in Massachusetts. But,
oh, I'm thinking of Benoit. He's over there in Europe.
He's in Switzerland. He left the channel because he was mad that another user was not thrown out of the channel. So
that wouldn't be the boogeyman, would
no,
it?
No, that's Gaia. That's Gaia. Yeah, Forest Value left because of boogeyman. You see, there's always conditions to people's appearances, apparently. So
yeah, I know Marcus Allen was kind of irritated by boogeyman, I guess.
Yeah, you see how that works? Boogeyman knocked out Marcus and Forest Value, but some people. Boogeyman hasn't been knocked out by anyone yet, but everyone's telling me to get rid of him. But as you heard, he generates more content and comments than just about anyone else in the last few years.
Yeah, I don't mind addressing. You know, he raised the issue of the so-called the jumpers.
That's what I wanted to talk to you about, because you must have an opinion on that. Lint,
yeah,
Citron,
that was settled for me years ago, and I'll explain. Why? Actually, this is quite a story to tell.
Oh, good.
My perspective.
Steven says Lynn is a fountain of knowledge. So there you go. And he also says, does Lynn have a background in astrology at all?
Actually, I spent a lot of years studying astrology. Excuse me. Tarot reading. Manly P. Hall's Secret Teachings of All Ages. I have an original edition from the 1890s of Albert Pike's Morals and Dogma, which is sort of the Bible of the Scottish Rite. I studied the Tao Te Ching. For a number of years, I and a group I was in studied these various mystical traditions, and that included astrotheology and astrology as well. So I think I'm pretty well versed in that.
Yeah, I'd say. Dirty Benny said he's not into MMA, so it must be somebody else.
Yeah, I think it must be Benoit, because Benoit...
Oh, yeah, it's Benoit. That's right.
Yeah, and when I was still able to access the forums, and for some... I've lost my... I got an obsolete machine. I really got to get a new computer.
Yeah.
It's the old processor, and it's not allowing me to connect to certain sites, but... We had a back and forth about, you know, how fake or how real was mixed martial arts. And, you know, since I'm pretty close to it, I work out at a gym there, it looks pretty real to me. But that was an interesting discussion that we had. Back to the jumpers.
Oh, let's talk jumpers. Yeah. Boogeyman thinks they're real. No, I'm not supposed to put words in his mouth. So did you listen to him? So you probably know what he was saying.
Yeah. There's two questions here. One is the question of nobody died versus, well, we think probably nobody died, but we don't know for sure because it's kind of hard to prove. There's that argument. But the argument that Boogeyman was making is that the jumpers look real to him. And this was quite a bit of, this was a real bone of contention between me and Rosalie Grable, the web fairy.
Right. And I played that call with Marcus and Web Fairy. Right. I never really was I wasn't into it back then. And by the time I got into it, they were gone.
Well, she was the first one to put up really, I thought, very professionally done web pages showing the fake the Hezer CNN Hezer Connie,
mm-hmm.
and the Evan Fairbanks, the ABC Evan Fairbanks clips, those cartoons of Flight 175 hitting the south, allegedly hitting the South Tower. So I have to say, with respect to Webb Ferry, Rosalie Grable, that she was one of the earliest to put up a comprehensive site that was essentially concerned with the TV fakery that was broadcast by the mainstream news networks, or legacy news networks, mm-hmm. as I like to call them now.
Right, legacy.
And so I felt a kind of debt to, and I got to know her very well. I actually bought her a train ticket on a nice luxury compartment to come here and stay at my house for a week.
Oh, wow.
So that we could go down. This would have been in the spring of 2005, 2006, that right around the time when there were the large anti-war demonstrations in D.C. against the invasion of Iraq. And this was also at the time that Morgan Reynolds and Judy Wood were holding their presentations at the National Press Club, which I got to say treated us very well. So I thought, well, this is great. I'll bring Grable here and we'll commute down to D.C., which is down the road from me, about an hour, and, get involved in this stuff. And, of course, Rosalie Grable had died of cancer quite a few years back, I think, at least about 10 years ago. It's been a while. She was a chain smoker, I guess maybe a year or two older than me. And I got in real, I don't want to say violent arguments, but I just couldn't get through to her on certain questions. One, for example, was Ron Paul's failure to speak out about 9/11 being an inside job at the time. Ron Paul had this cadre of devoted followers who had followed him for years and years and years. And after 9/11, these people became 9/11 truthers because they knew at the very least it was an inside job. Whether they embraced the fakery or not, they were basically on the same. We had a Yahoo group called 9/11 Inside Jobbers, and that was the big thing at the time, to say this was an inside job by our own government, which should have been a no-brainer. But for some reason, these people would do everything possible to explain away. It's like the Trumpers now. Actually, not as bad as the Trumpers now, because Trump is a lot worse. But I felt that Ron Paul's failure, Ron Paul was saying things like, well, we should privatize the war on terror and issue letters of marque under the Constitution that would delegate to private mercenaries the war against Al-Qaeda. And I thought this was really lame, and that Ron Paul should call out 9/11 as an inside job, which he really wouldn't. And I don't think he ever has, actually. I don't think he's done it now.
No.
And I just couldn't get around the fact that these people were still worshiping him, even though 90% of their time was being spent trying to convince newbies and others that 9/11 was an inside job. And many of them understood that there was TV fakery involved, but they would not criticize Ron Paul. And the other thing that really, really blew it apart between me and Grable was she got obsessed with this Edna Cintrone.
Right.
And jumps. Yeah, and how terrible this was. Because I think Grable probably thought that people were in the towers when those controlled demolitions were kicked off, and that people died in the towers.
Did she think it was controlled demolition?
Oh yeah, she knew that.
Yeah.
Anybody could see that. You know, anybody. To me, the controlled demolition aspect of it is like a no-brainer. It really is. It's a no-brainer because, for one thing, you had Building 7. For another thing, how else do you bring? I mean, it was ridiculous. These two 100-story skyscrapers were turned into piles of rubble and dust. Anybody with any common sense would understand that this wasn't done by jet fuel fires that melted steel or any of that. To me, it was intuitively obvious that they were controlled demolitions. Why couldn't Ron Paul say these were controlled demolitions? And that probably means this was an inside job involving our own government and national security apparatus and the Pentagon. To me, the hit on the Pentagon was a dead giveaway. There was treason involved. And I've been through my explanation of that, how there's no way that a big, fat Boeing commercial jet, which is obviously not a Soviet MiG or a cruise missile, could penetrate the defensive grid around Washington, D.C. and score a direct hit on the wall of the most heavily guarded fortress on the planet, the Pentagon.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Deliberate NORAD stand down, and the fact that no one was calling it out as either a failure, because after Pearl Harbor, Major General Short and Admiral Kimmel were actually court-martialed for the quote-unquote failure at Pearl Harbor. So whether you think Pearl Harbor was a false flag or was set up or not, one way or another, the highest-ranking military officers involved were court-martialed for what was apparently a failure on their part to defend U.S. forces at Pearl Harbor and to anticipate a Japanese attack. To me, in the case of what was being called the new Pearl Harbor, 9/11, and that's what they were calling it, the idea of a big, fat, slow-moving, Boeing commercial jet can't go much more than 400 miles per hour, especially if it's too low to the ground. And it was just unthinkable that such a failure could have occurred without, one, somebody being scapegoated and held responsible. I really thought when I got home that evening that we'd have resignations from Rumsfeld, the Secretary of Defense, from General Myers, who was acting head of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Ralph Eberhard, who was commander of NORAD. This was unthinkable that the Pentagon could have been hit like this unless it was an inside job to me. But one way or another, even if they were arguing a failure, somebody should be held accountable. Not a single public official or military officer was held accountable for the hit on the Pentagon by a Boeing commercial jet, we were told.
All right.
Which made no sense. So that alone was enough for me. But as I say, the controlled demolition should have been obvious as well. Now, here was Grable insisting that people died in the towers because that they, I said, well, how do you know they weren't evacuated? And we would have this argument back and forth. Because to me, once you've shown that they're willing to use video fakery on TV news, everything becomes suspect.
Yes. Well, that's very logical. Very logical.
Right. But Grable she was just obsessed with Edna Cintrone standing there waving her jacket.
Right.
In that poll. Right.
How did
very suspicious of.
How did she know it was Edna Cintrone? Was it
because it became a narrative.
Okay.
Edna Cintrone's husband, apparently, became a character in the narrative in mainstream media. It was not well known, but to anybody who was, reading the material that was coming out in mainstream media at the time, legacy media, the martyrs who died in the towers, and especially the jumpers, was, it was being used to great psychological effect to traumatize people. So, I think the last time I spoke to Gray, but we had a real argument over Edna Cintrone, because I said, this is very suspicious to me. I don't believe it. And then, subsequent to that, and this is a few years later, about 2008, 2009, I have to credit the site called Let's Roll 9/11 that was run by Larry McWilliams and Phil Jahan. Now, anybody who was involved in the 9/11 Truth Movement probably will remember Phil Jahan from the very beginning. Jahan really annoyed me in the beginning because he kept insisting that he kept fixating on what he called the pod, claiming that one of these videos of Flight 175 showed a pod underneath the plane. And his explanation was this was a special kind of plane, all that, blah, blah, blah. So he wouldn't come all the way to being a no-planer. And for a long time was preoccupied with this. We used to call them the pod people. These were the 9/11 truthers who were really clinging to this idea of a specially equipped plane that was somehow or other able to, penetrate the South Tower like a garage door opener or something like that. And I always thought that was ridiculous. But after a few years, I think Jahan came around to understanding the TV fakery. And then Let's Roll 9/11 became a very good site, because I believe it was the first site to show that picture of the hollow towers and to present the hollow towers paradigm. And then, subsequently, they were the ones, I believe the first ones, to publish the gelatin bee story.
And by the way, first of all, I want to say point number one, or note number one, in tonight's show notes. This is FAK 591, Lynn Ertel with two L's. I just put a link to the Edna Cintron aberration that Simon Schack posted on Clues Forum, where he shows one picture with tons of smoke and the next picture with no smoke. So he's just saying these images don't line up, they're different. And excuse me, Edna Cintron, I think he zoomed in on that one very fuzzy, impossible to see image. And
that requires a degree of visual literacy and technical analysis of an image.
Yeah, you're just looking at two pictures. I don't think it takes that much talent.
Okay. Well, the inconsistency between two pictures, I agree, that should be enough to discredit one or the other. I agree with that. But I think the idea was that there were among the no-planers some people who were still clinging to the idea that people died horribly in this inside job, this 9/11 inside job. And they really were so emotionally attached to that idea that there had to be martyrs, and Edna Cintron was one of these martyrs. And so, you know, it became caused a break between me and Rosalie Grable, because I didn't know for sure, but I was pretty well inclined to believe that whatever we were seeing was fake.
Yeah. Simon was saying here, this is the aberration he's saying. The video showed thick smoke coming out of the hole the whole time in the images. Yet the picture of Edna Cintron, there's no smoke where she's standing coming out of the hole. So when did they take that picture? Was there a stoppage of the smoke? Because according to the official video, there was constant black smoke coming out. But the picture has nothing. There's no smoke. But when did they take that picture?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's one.
As Simon says, in fact, this may be one of the worst cock-ups of the 9/11 image fakery factory, as they decided to release at some later stage these close-up images of the gash with people seen standing in it. They completely forgot about the fact that the 9/11 TV imagery showed uninterruptedly thick smoke gushing out of the gash for the entire duration of their 102-minute made-for-TV Hollywood movie. Yeah, that is a cock-up. Case closed.
I would say so. Yeah, I would say so. And Gerard Holmgren, he also broke with Grable over this stuff. Right. He got downright furious with her, and then he cut her off, and he cussed out the people. We were all at that time using a website called 9/11 Researchers that was set up by Rick Siegel. All the no-planers were over there, because we'd been kicked out of Democratic Underground.
What happened to him?
He fled. Well, you want me to talk about Rick Siegel?
Yeah, because I barely know who that is. I don't.
He's very important. He's very important, and I'll tell you why.
Okay, who was he? When did he get going on the 9/11 thing?
Rick Siegel, we were told, or he claimed, actually worked in the World Trade Center.
Okay.
And
Rick Siegel.
On the day of the attack, he set up a camera across the river in Hoboken, a video camera, and took video footage of the collapse of at least one of the towers. Well, I guess it was both of the towers. No, I think it was.
How do you spell his last name? S-E-A-G-L-E?
No, S-I-E-G-L-E.
Oh, okay.
Right. Now, and I want to tell his story because I think it's important, because this is going to kind of bring me into contention with Simon Schack.
Because he's not on Simon's site. I don't see Rick Siegel.
And he's probably mentioned somewhere in Clues Forum, but they dismissed him.
Oh, okay.
And that's a real weakness on their part, and I'll tell you why.
Okay.
Because Rick Siegel took this footage that he took from an amateur video camera and made a documentary out of it called 9/11 Eyewitness.
Oh, sorry, here it is. Unforgettable mega shill. Rick Siegel.
Well, right. They called him a mega shill. Called 9/11 Eyewitness. And he actually entered his documentary, which was really nothing more than his footage. And he has some commentary in it. One of the commentaries he has in his footage is pointing to a helicopter that was hovering right next to the tower at the moment that you started to see it collapse. So he had some notion that the helicopter played a role in triggering the explosions that brought the towers down or something along those lines. But here's the important thing. Rick Siegel submitted his documentary, 9/11 Eyewitness, at a number of film festivals and won awards. Okay. And it is still available. And then he subsequently took all the footage and put out something called 9/11 Raw, which was just the entirety of his raw video footage. And I have never read a detailed critique of his footage at Clues Forum. Maybe it's there, but I never saw it. I just saw him dismissed as a shill. Now, I got to know Rick. I met him once or twice down in D.C. As I say, he provided a website where the No Planers could hang out. Nico Halp and Rosalie Grable, a whole bunch of us, Holmgren. And really, I felt, did a lot to help the movement. And then he subsequently, we were told, fled to Spain and is living in Europe and has lived in Europe ever since. And whether there were threats made against him, I'm not entirely sure. But I went ahead and I purchased 50 copies of his 9/11. First, I purchased like 20 copies of 9/11 Eyewitness with the award on the front from the, I forget which, you know, film festival he won this award for best documentary. And then I bought 50 copies of his 9/11 Raw. And I said to myself, I know by the time I get rid of handing out for free, I wasn't selling it. When I would go to demonstrations and events and meetings, I would say, hey, here's footage that shows you these were controlled demolitions. Because even though there's a wall of smoke there, you can still see the towers go down. Now, maybe Simon Shack is going to say that that footage is completely fake.
Yeah.
But he never said so on Clues Forum, and I'd like to hear one way or another.
Oh,
I'd
yeah.
like to hear him pick apart Rick Siegel's footage from 9/11 Eyewitness and 9/11 Raw. I have to tell you that over the years, one by one, I ended up handing out these 50 copies of this video. I retained like two or three of them. And I said to myself, by the time I get around to handing these out, surely people are going to see that these were controlled demolitions. And it never happened. In other words, the truth, my expectations were never met. They really weren't in terms of, you know, I thought by the time I get around to disposing of 50 of these videos, surely the world, you know, the country will come around, but it just never happened. So, yes, remaining in my mind is a question of whether Rick Siegel's videos, which, as I say, received awards at documentary film festivals for showing the controlled demolitions in real time, on his video camera that was set up across the river in Hoboken. And you can see him set up the camera, I'm pretty sure on this. He sets up the camera. There are a bunch of people who were videotaping the destruction of the towers from Hoboken. Not a lot, but a few. And so, yeah, I would like Rick Siegel, the question of Rick Siegel's footage, forget Rick Siegel personally. I would like his footage deconstructed and analyzed and not just dismissed. And I never saw that done again.
Well, they do have a thread. And Simon did do some analysis. And
yeah, I thought it was cursory and superficial.
Okay, so there's the lone bird, where a lone bird rides a hot thermal in a circle above the dust clouds. That's funny. That's a bit of a clown show.
Yeah, the birds were kind of a, you know, people.
There was one bird, the lone bird, and Simon says, If this inane video animation doesn't offend your intelligence, nothing will. Please.
Well, I want you to watch. You should look at it yourself.
I did. No, I did. I just did while you were talking. I was looking at it on the screen here. It's funny.
But, so he is accusing Rick Siegel of having fabricated or using fabricated footage?
Yes.
Because that's a pretty, you
he
know,
says
that,
it,
that's a,
please do not let yourself get hypnotized by the audio track of Rick Siegel's videos.
Right. The audio track was criticized because Rick Siegel was making claims about how he thought it was done.
He said, turn the volume down to zero. As it is, we are asked to believe that Rick Siegel, as he ran down with his zappy scooter to the Hoboken Pier with his camera, somehow had a radio TV audio feed running in the proximity of his video camera microphone.
Rick Why Siegel, would that be necessary?
Well, because it was...
All he did was take footage and then
no, but there's
a voiceover on...
Oh, okay. Says Rick Siegel
so
is
Simon
a... So
Simon is insisting once again that nobody in Hoboken got footage of the demolitions? Because it wasn't just Rick Siegel there were some other cameras there, too.
Well, he just said Rick Siegel. Rick Siegel is a perp and now, as far as I know, taking refuge in Spain... He needs to be tracked down and interrogated in my ideal world, of course. Please keep in mind that Rick Siegel is the guy credited with the one and only early released amateur footage of the World Trade Center collapse. All the other extant high resolution amateur World Trade Center collapse imagery was released months or years later. In any case, the incredibly poor resolution of Rick Siegel's alleged 9/11 video material is a red flag in itself. To be sure, he wasn't filming with a crappy cell phone camera since they didn't exist in 2001. And remember, even the first images of the moon landing were as atrociously crappy as Rick Siegel's 9/11 videos.
Well, you know, to me, when I watch 9/11 Eyewitness or 9/11 Raw, I see smoke obscuring the demolitions, but I still see the towers go down. So I don't know what Simon's talking. I mean, what are we supposed to... Were they controlled demolitions or not? They were controlled demolitions. Rick Siegel's shows controlled demolitions.
Well, here is
so
a moment.
This is very frustrating to me. What were we supposed to say? Oh, no, that's fake.
Well,
what does that mean? They weren't really controlled demolitions?
No, Rick Siegel's footage is fake. Here is a moment featuring the World Trade Center 2 collapse. The smoke reflected in the building at right flows in the wrong direction. This is a lazy... An animator. This is a lazy error an animator may easily make since when you wish to mirror an object in a window, you have to flip the image horizontally. However, in the case of moving imagery, such as the drifting smokes, you'll have to remember to also reverse the sideways motion of the moving image. So
I would like you yourself.
I'm looking at it. I'm looking at the, I'm looking at it here. So.
Because it certainly doesn't look like a cartoon.
No, it's just CGI animation that one section is wrong. So
that becomes a question of visual literacy.
Mm-hmm.
Because
most
people looking at that would think it was an accurate representation of controlled demolitions of a 100-story skyscraper.
Sure.
That's what it looked like to me.
Yeah.
There's no doubt it's obscured by smoke, but...
And the chopper is missing?
Yes, Chopper 5 or Chopper 9, whatever it's called, all that.
So the vanishing helicopters.
But look what was happening here. Here I had in my hands an amateur video that proved these were controlled demolitions. And here's September Clue saying, oh no, you can't show that to people because that's to prove that these were controlled demolitions. Because it's fake.
Yeah.
Well, why would anybody go to the trouble to produce a fake video proving that these were controlled demolitions?
Right. Well, I don't know if it proves...
You know, it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. I don't know if it's proving they're controlled demolitions.
Sense.
It just proves that the towers collapsed and there's footage of it. I don't know
you could see it. You could see it, the progress. You could see
yeah.
it. Believe me, it looks like... to me, I thought, oh my gosh, this video that was taken from Hoboken by Rick Siegel... shows controlled demolitions. All you got to do is show this to somebody and they'll see that these buildings were demolished. That was my attitude towards it. And here was September Clue saying, no, you can't use that because it's fake. So, you know, and I watched it. I watched it again. I watched it again. I didn't see anything obviously fake about it. He's saying the smoke is going in the wrong direction.
Yeah, that's true. It is.
I have to go watch it again because this is a question of visual literacy.
Well, I put a link to the thread. It's a short thread. You can get through it easily, anyone who wants to look. And he's just showing all the anomalies. And here's another good summary here that Simon says. He says, I therefore rest my case. No available 9/11 imagery can be trusted as legitimate footage. It stands to reason that a thick, visually impenetrable, military-grade smokescreen was raised around the World Trade Center area.
Well, that's true. That's
so
true.
As to ensure that if any real, legitimate amateur footage of the day was captured on film, in spite of possible electromagnetic HERF measures selectively disabling
right,
any
measures,
camera,
right.
video electronics in the area, it would only show Lower Manhattan engulfed in smoke and little else. No details of the various tower collapses were recorded on film, as they were safely demolished behind a smoke screen. The oldest and simplest trick in the military warfare deception book, if there ever was one.
Right, these were 100-story skyscrapers.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Now, whether they were hollow or not, 100 stories is tall.
It is. Hey, so look, it's 9/11.
No, right, so you're telling me that the smoke was enough to show, to obscure even the top of it collapsing?
Yeah. Well, that's what Simon says.
So nobody anywhere across the river in New Jersey at a distance... Nobody anywhere got any amateur footage of the demolitions.
Well, has there been? I think Simon said stuff was released from the official dump a couple of years later. So
yeah, a couple of years later.
And,
but anyway, we're back to arguing visual literacy again. And to me, the idea that Rick Siegel's videos were fake. I go back and I watch them again and again, and I don't see what's fake about them. I just don't know enough. I'm not visually literate enough.
When's the last time you reviewed the Clues Forum forums?
Oh, I followed that thread on Clues Forum because I may have been the one who actually raised the question. I said, "Well, I've got Rick Siegel's footage here. What do you think of it?" And it was just dismissed out of hand. Now, maybe they went back subsequently and did a more detailed analysis of it, but it's not obvious to me that it's fake. I see the wall of smoke, of course.
I also see
the top 10 stories collapsing in a perfect controlled demolition.
Yeah. Well, take it.
Are they saying that the smoke went up high enough, that the smoke was up, that somehow or other the smoke obscured every inch of the tower going down?
Take a look at this. As Simon says, oh, and by the way, let me clarify just one thing. Yes, I do believe Manhattan was enveloped in smoke until dusk. Lots and lots of smoke. In fact, far, far too much smoke to be possibly justified by any sort of building collapse. No matter how large those buildings were, any demolition job, however large, has the dust settling in a matter of minutes, not hours.
That's true.
And this is where Judy Wood's dustification theory comes handy for the perps. The idea that the towers were pulverized by some secret exotic military superweapon would help justifying that gigantic smoke cloud enveloping and obscuring from view all of Lower Manhattan for the entire day.
Yeah, all right. So they obscured the area with smoke.
And he shows a picture. He says, assuming this image is real, do real building demolitions produce this much smoke? And a thick cloud that lingers in the air for hours.
Well, I don't know enough about controlled demolitions, and I don't know.
Yes,
what
you
they
do.
Used to demolish.
You can go to the Loiseau Group and watch endless controlled demolitions.
In Vegas. Yeah, that's right. I've seen Vegas.
They're fantastic.
Right.
Actually, I'm behind. They used to send me email. Here's Berkman 2 building controlled demolition. Where's this? They knocked down 18-story building.
Bottom line is I got suckered by Rick Siegel.
I think so. According to Simon,
because Rick Siegel was a no-planer.
That's okay.
He was a no-planer.
Okay, well, it's controlled opposition. They give you some, truth, and then they lead you into La La Land. Here's an 18-story building. That's Kai 1818 being demolished in Jacksonville.
I have to tell you that all the no-planers and inside jobbers I knew considered Rick Siegel to be genuine. And not only that, as I say, when we were kicked off all these websites, he set up a website called 9/11 Researchers.
Okay, here's an 18-story building. There's the dust plume.
No. We're talking about, come on, the towers were like close to 100.
I know how big they were, but I'm just showing, we're just looking at a dust cloud from 18 stories. And we're looking at the dust, okay. But it doesn't linger for hours.
No, not for hours.
It goes up and it comes down in a couple minutes.
Yeah, well, they could have been running the smoke machines for hours.
That's what Simon was saying. Yeah. I have to admit, Boogeyman has pointed out to me that I have not done my job to read the clues for him in a more comprehensive way, which was my original intention all of 10 years ago. So really, I got sidetracked and just not doing the proper in-depth discussion, which is what I wanted to do. Boy, this video is so clear.
What difference does it make what modality was used to demolish the towers? Fetzer still buys into the idea that maybe micro nukes were used.
I know. Well, he's wrong at this point. If you think nukes are real, then again, you're not doing your research. So,
I don't know what. Here's the thing. I don't know what a controlled demolition of a 100-story skyscraper. I don't know what would be special about it or unique about it, as opposed to building 7, and also I believe Simon Shack says that all of the videos of WTC 7 are fake.
Yes, they are. And he said WTC 7 was where they sent the smoke from. Boy, what a beautiful collapse!
But why would that buy them? There are multiple versions of the takedown of WTC 7. So are they all fake? One of them has the famous, because it has Dan Rather voicing over saying, well, that looks just like the dot when they dynamite a building.
Yeah, well, that's true.
Well, what does that buy the perps? I mean, here's what I'm saying. Okay, so they showed you, so they're showing you fake, digitally generated images of a perfect controlled demolition. Well, what's the point? If they were real demolitions, which I guess they were because the buildings came down in perfect freefall, symmetric freefall, we know they were controlled demolitions. So why would they need to fake it if they're going to tell you, if they're going to make it look exactly like a controlled demolition? I don't understand
They needed to fake it just to...
Well, that's what I'm saying. You know, why fake something that's real? Anyway,
they just didn't want you to. They just didn't want you to see the real thing, and that's what.
Okay, I mean.
Now I'm reading your comment here. Let's close on this because we're coming up to an hour, and you've done. People can find you on Facebook. You've done tons of work recently on Sandy Hoax. Give a few comments on Sandy Hoax. What do you think of the Alex Jones trial? Do you agree with Miles Mathis that it's a show trial? It's not real?
Jones has been compromised forever.
Right. Okay.
I told you the role that Jones played. What a despicable bastard that he played ridiculing and censoring no-planers and people who were pointing to the TV fakery. And he even said...
To this day, right? To this day?
I think even... he said, first of all, well, there would have been witnesses. No. You can't... There aren't that many line of sight. There really aren't any very... There are very few good line of sight views you have of the towers from anywhere in there.
You had Hoboken with Rick Siegel. Yeah, it gets back to Rick Siegel, yeah.
Right, and also the Nauday stuff. But we were presented with an odd A. Now, that clearly was a setup.
Oh, my God, yeah. Yeah, that's true.
Because that's the only imagery we have of the first hit,
yeah.
The alleged first hit. And you know, we could go on for hours about that. So Jones has been compromised on 9/11 from the very beginning. And I remember him even saying, you people who are saying that ABC and CNN would have broadcast fake video, you don't know the media like I do. I have been in the media for years, and I know people, and they wouldn't they couldn't get away with that. They wouldn't do that. That's one of the things he said. So that's a dead giveaway of what a sellout he is. I have nothing good to say about Jones. Sandy Hook, oh, obviously they wrote the script, and in the script he had to play a certain role, and it was really despicable because, you know, he went up there the day of Sandy Hook itself. He was up there in Newtown denouncing it as a drill and a hoax. Yes. He denounced it as a hoax, and he would have been saying then that nobody really got shot. Because it was obvious. It was obvious. They wouldn't let the parents, ostensibly, they wouldn't let the parents in to see the bodies. On and on. Everything about it was fake. Everything about Sandy Hook was fake. If people want my recommendation, Sophia Smallstorm has done, the best. Well, actually, there's great.
Yes, you know, Sophia Smallstorm. Yeah.
Yeah, both her Unraveling Sandy Hook and Sandy Hook in Five Dimensions, which explains the overall picture.
She did two documentaries?
Yeah, I think she worked one into the other as well. The integrated capstone event.
Yes, that's the one I posted on Fakel,
right,
too.
Right, but yeah. Hers isn't the only one. The Independent Media Solidarity Collective, a group of fine researchers, did We Need to Talk About Sandy Hook.
Right.
And the Life of Adam, which basically proves Adam Lanza to be a complete fictional fabrication, a non-existing character. And not a real human, you know, Adam Lanza was somebody they invented, and they piggybacked him onto Ryan Lanza, who I guess is the son of Peter Lanza. And
he's a real person, and he's somehow connected to the military industrial complex.
Ryan Lanza was the one who originally was picked up. You could see him being picked up by the cops, and initially, he was the one who they fingered as responsible for the shootings. And then they said, no, it was his younger brother, Adam, who has Asperger's, and they went on with all that. But it made me think that maybe they set up Ryan Lanza and would have used him as a patsy somehow for this story. I mean, it certainly was looking like that. So, to me, Sandy Hook, in a way, it's bigger than 9/11.
Okay.
In some ways, it's bigger than 9/11 because they set up a whole Potemkin village there. And this is where I get into my notion of a cast of thousands. And before we get off, I want to ask your listeners to please watch the movie The Day of the Locust.
What's that about? Day of the Locust. So I have to watch
Day of
that?
The Locust, right, the movie, or read the novel published in 1936 by Nathaniel West, and it explains to you the role of Hollywood during the Great Depression. There's a battle scene in it where they're making a movie about the Battle of Waterloo, and this would have been in like 1935, 1936, and they build the scaffolding, and they fail to put up the signs that say danger, and the scaffolding isn't really complete. And you know how on a movie set there's multiple things going on at once. So they're filming this scene of these British and French troops fighting, and they're climbing up the scaffold, and the scaffold collapses. And it's just a catastrophe on the set. Luckily, no one is killed, but there are a number of extras on this cast of thousands that suffer broken limbs, and then there's a subsequent discussion of how they're going to... Don't worry, we'll keep them, we'll pay, the insurance company will take care of that. And at one point, the lead character in the story, who's an artist working for, working there for the studio, he says, hey boss, you know, they didn't put those signs up. And they all look at him, all the big shots, the Hollywood look at him and say, don't worry about it. In other words, keep your mouth shut about that. Well, that's important to me because accidents do happen when they're making a big budget Hollywood film. Stuntmen get injured. Shit happens. And so if you're going to consider a PSYOP with a whole lot of kinetics involved, like controlled demolitions or car crashes or explosions or shootings, whatever, it's always possible that there can be a mishap or an accident. I mean, somebody can sprain an ankle or break a leg just running out of a building. But we shouldn't assume that these things are always executed perfectly. We know there are screw-ups.
Right.
To me, Robbie Parker laughing on camera is a screw-up. And as I say, a lot of people thought Building 7 was a screw-up. Why did it went down 5:30 that evening?
5:20,
that wouldn't make any 5:20, yeah. That wouldn't make any sense. That's a dead giveaway that it was a controlled demolition.
Yeah, yeah.
And they even sent out Larry Silverstein to say, let's pull it, which is an admission that that's what they did. Now, I guess they don't mind putting that in our face.
Right, right.
But, you know, now does that still mean...
It can be interpreted both ways, though. That's the problem.
Well, here's the thing. Clues for it. You know, Simon Schacht is saying, we can't use any of the videos of Building 7. And there, like I say, there's about a half a dozen of them. In fact, there is a video of Amy Goodman and a huge crowd of people being told to move back, it's coming down, as they watch WTC 7 come down. And that is on amateur video as well. So why would they have bothered to fake that? Really, why would they have bothered to fake that? But what he's telling us is, we can't even use the most obvious, self-evident, visual indication that a 47-story skyscraper, the Salomon Brothers building, was brought down by a classic controlled demolition. We can't use that because Simon Schacht says it's all fake.
All right.
So, all right, throw that out the window. We can't use that. We can't, that's where we end up. So... Okay, I guess if I show somebody a video of Building 7, and several videos of Building 7, including Dan Rather saying that looks like a controlled demolition, I'm misleading people. I'm leading them astray because I'm showing them fake video.
Well, you're not leading. Yeah, well. Okay, so I should watch Day of the Locust here? Is that worth downloading?
Absolutely, and here's why it's important.
Yeah, tell me again. I'll watch it. I'll try and watch it.
We had a miserable depression that lasted like 10 years or more, really until the war.
Might have another one.
And people were starving to death in this depression. This is best example. This is Steinbeck's novel, The Grapes of Wrath, where, you see they're riding boxcars, the homeless, and one guy starves to death at the very end, and he's saved from starvation by a woman who actually gives him her breast milk to keep him alive. But meanwhile, Hollywood had an unlimited budget. And a cast of thousands. And if you watch this movie, The Day of the Locust, produced in the 1970s, I think it might have won some Academy Awards.
Yeah, 75. It says 74, John Schlesinger.
Right, well, I think he did The French Connection. I'm not sure, or maybe. The Day of the Locust is a very, I think, realistic and accurate representation of what Hollywood was all about during the Great Depression and how a cast of thousands is used to make a movie. And at the very end, the same cast of thousands riots in the streets of Hollywood and just tears the place apart. That's sort of the climax of the film. It definitely will give you insight into the history of Hollywood and how this is the foundation of what we're living through right now. This is where they basically tested all. I mean, Hollywood was called the dream factory because while the nation was suffering through this miserable depression in the 1930s, the only relief that people had was to go to the movies, where for a nickel or a dime, you could sit through these movies that Hollywood was making. And they show you, the making of the movie in the day, this one huge blockbuster film in The Day of the Locust. And they show you how they use a cast of thousands. Every one of that member of cast of thousands has to sign a non-disclosure agreement. Why is this important? Because this is what Sandy Hook is. This is what Uvalde is. This is what these fake, these drills, these integrated capstone events are. They employ a cast of maybe dozens, maybe hundreds, maybe thousands. Were there thousands employed for the 9/11 PSYOP? You know, maybe not. They probably didn't need that many. But in a case like Sandy Hook, you need the whole state of Connecticut to go along with it.
And you did. You had the governor, and it's a small state as well.
Oh, you had the governor. You had, all the cops went along with it. This is something that Wolf Halbig needs to explain to us. How can these people be so evil?
Well, really? They're paid.
Yeah, I guess they're paid. Yeah.
Look at how many people are being paid right now for the coronavirus.
Right, right. That's what the Day of the Locust shows you. How an entire new economic model can be built on simulation. At one point, one of the characters, who's the art director for the studio, he's kind of an authority figure in the film. He's sitting there while they're drinking, and he's talking to this graduate of Yale who's come there to work as an art drawing sets, designing as a set designer. He says, "We're grown men making mud pies for the American public." That's how he characterizes these fantastically expensive movies that they're making. We're grown men making mud pies for the American public. That describes perfectly a Sandy Hook, right? I mean, they contrive this thing. They create it. It's a total fiction. It's scripted. But dozens, hundreds, thousands are willing to go along with it because everybody wants to be part of the narrative. And the thing that really comes across sharply in the Day of the Locust is how everybody in California wants to work in Hollywood and be a part of a movie. Everyone wants to be in this process. No matter how much they might have to lie or cheat, or they don't care how much they might have to, because the prostitution is a theme in the film as well. A lot of these starlets, these young women who come there to make their way in Hollywood, they end up just becoming hookers. You see that as well. There's a cockfight scene in it too that shows the relationship with the Mexicans who are involved, who are, you know, doing also part of, because of this cast of thousands. It can be anybody, you know. It can be anybody. It can be rich. It can be, well, typically they're not. They're working class people, but it's a new economic model. Let's hire a cast of thousands to simulate reality so we can brainwash a whole society with these mud pies, these elaborate constructs that we create, Hollywood movies here in the Dream Factory. And like I say, when they show you the staging of the Battle of Waterloo, and this is in the 1930s, right? All this is going to be forgotten as digital effects replace real people in movies. You know, it'll be forgotten. The cast of thousands is no longer needed, right? Because everything is that you can create a digital crowd now.
Yeah, oh yeah. And you've got a lot of good stuff here on your Facebook post, your Facebook channel, Lynn or Tell. I'll put a link to that if anyone's on Facebook. I just started a group on Facebook just for fun to see how Facebook works, called Unknown Causes. It's sort of a companion to Died Suddenly, where I was just going to...
Yeah, I like Died Suddenly, which was formerly We Will Not Be Silent. Or,
yes.
Is that right?
Yes.
It's very good. It's
good
very
marketing.
Yeah, it's very good. So, hey, Facebook still has I know there's a lot of bots out there. It's probably not as many as on Twitter, but a lot of people, you know, it is still a way to connect with people. So, of course, granted, it's censored. It's a controlled venue. I'm in a lockdown right now on Facebook for the next 20 days at least because...
Oh.
Yeah, I posted just a little... See, what I was trying to do was get around the censorship by posting graphics, which is to say a graphic image of words.
Right. And does that work?
It was working for a while, but now apparently...
They're reading. They probably just have people reading it.
I think they've actually got actual humans.
Oh, yeah. Come on. Yeah. And
That's what it is.
Yeah, they get paid, so. Yeah, there's probably a lot of algorithms that tip off, and now you're on the list anyway, so they're just going to go to your page all the time. Don't you think?
Yeah. Yeah. So,
yeah, you did some Sandy Hook 20 more disturbing questions about Sandy Hook. I don't know if you got that from someone else, Abraham.
Oh, yeah. It's mostly stuff I'm getting from other people, but it's, you know, like I say, there's so much material available in Sandy Hook now. And since they're putting it in the news with this phony show trial, and someone deconstructed the testimony and the judge and other things, and there's some great videos out there that show that it's a show trial. But my next question is what is a show trial? Stalin held show trials, and then he shot the people he had, the people who were convicted, shot, which included some of the leading Bolsheviks. So just because it's a show trial doesn't mean people aren't executed, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I have run into this from a couple of people who say, yeah, they recognize that, I think they were talking about Nicholas Cruz and the Parkland High School thing. And there are people who, even though they know it was a drill, they know it was completely fake, they think that real patsies are, hey, look, we've got some of these more recent events that are being staged as active shooter events. And you saw the picture of the guy who they picked up in this latest one. There are people out there who understand that these are fake, that these are drills, and that there's a fake media narrative piggybacked onto the drill, but they're convinced that real patsies are being used and stuck and convicted and stuck in prison.
Right.
Or facing, they're convinced that Joker Tsarnaev isn't, you know, that he really is facing, well, I don't think they're really going to execute him, but isn't he facing a potential death penalty or something right now? I guess what I'm saying is, sure, there's show trials. Sure, they're staged. But does that mean that Alex Jones's lawyers aren't going to have to turn over millions of dollars to the legal team that representing Neil Heslin and the ones who sued him? And that there isn't going to be real money involved?
Yeah, I don't think there is going to be real money, really. I think that, yeah.
And no one goes to prison?
That's correct.
James Holmes wasn't locked up? And
No, I don't think so. I don't think so. That's that, and OJ wasn't locked up either.
Come on. Yeah, OJ wasn't. That's pretty clear. Yeah. But because he, after all, the jury found him innocent.
Hey, by the way, you sent me a couple good links to the Anne Heche stuff. I haven't even looked at them, but I just trust you. Enough to put them on FakoTube because I haven't had a chance, but. I'll put them.
The Anne Heche thing was so sloppily done.
Wow.
That and they're going to have to say now that she died, that, well, yeah, she was still alive and talking to the EMTs, but she died on the way to the hospital or she died at the hospital. That's what they're going to have to say now. How else can they explain the fact that she's climbing up out of the body bag before she even gets
I got to see this.
Everybody.
Yeah, it's an aerial shot. Yeah, it's an aerial video.
This aerial shot almost looks like models. I'm honest, to be honest with you. It almost looks like models. These fire trucks?
All over the web, people are saying, oh, look at this. She was still alive.
But I'm going to stop it.
And why two aerial ladder trucks, for God's sakes?
Watch what's going to happen. Now,
that happens whenever there's a bad crash, they'll send out. Well, that's an interesting question.
Oh, she got up and out.
Somebody just burst out of the body bag.
So here's the thing: is Clues Forum going to say that that's a cartoon?
I mean, it's impossible to be 100%.
No, I'm not going to speak for Cyan. We'll just speak for ourselves.
Whoever it is, they had him in a body bag, and they said,
"Why would they do that?"
No. Here we go.
Wow, who is that? Is that supposed to be Anne?
Now there's a struggle. This person seems to be pushing. Now this person does not look bloodied. This person does not look like their flesh is fried.
Well, this is a good one, Lynn. I appreciate that. I don't get, I don't go on every single video site. So yeah, anytime you got stuff, shoot it to me.
Okay, I'll do that.
And email's even better. Ima@fakeologist.com. I usually, I'm trying to scan everything though. You send me on Messenger there. That's fine.
So you use your email. This is kind of like arguments I have with IPS over whether the vaccine is really dangerous or not. You know, he has a kind of a agnostic view of that. And
no, it's not a bad view, but the problem is I know people that are young, unexplained cancer, and the only thing, obviously there's so many things that can be toxic, but the one thing that is universal almost is this vaccine. So anything that's been... I know we shouldn't attribute everything to the vaccine that goes wrong with people. Just like,
right, and it's not enough. It's not enough to say fake, fake, fake. We have to also be able to untangle just what component is real.
Well, that's hard.
What component is real? And if they're taking some drug-addled convict and saying you have to play the role of an active shooter, or we'll kill you anyway, and then bury him in a prison somewhere or drug him. You know, we have to be able to, you know, we should be able to untangle that from the whole narrative. Because as I say, there are people who think real patsies are being set up in these events.
Yeah.
And is Simon Shack willing to argue to me that Stalin didn't actually execute Zinoviev and Kamenev and so many others who were during the Moscow trials, which were filmed and broadcast? All, you know, people saw the newsreels of that all over the world, the Moscow trials, which were show trials. These people were framed, accused of being spies and all that, and subsequently shot. You know, they shot people in the Soviet Union. They executed them or shipped them to Siberia.
Yeah.
But I guess we don't have to worry about that because no one died and nobody cried.
Yeah. Well, I wouldn't extend it to that, but
right.
Hey, let me just mention that we had a really good interview on Sunday yesterday with Sanity for Sweden, and I like talking to the guy. He does good videos, but boy, he sure brings in the viewership. That video is at over 4,000 views on my small little video site. And FakoTube is doing pretty well, mainly because I think it's because I've bumped up the performance on that there. And I do get charged now on top of my monthly fee to host it for spreading it all over in the CDN, Content Delivery Network, caching setting where it's optimized for different continent. Yeah, so it's more accessible. So if anyone wants to make donations to the website, this is sort of an active account that seems to be charging my account more and more. So I think I've already spent an extra $20 just in the last 2 weeks just to serve up FakoTube videos. And people, it's more proof that people are really addicted to videos, even if it's just a static image and it's just audio. They really like their video platforms. That's just what they're used to. So, if you want to, I prefer audio personally, but I don't just stare at a screen for hours and hours. I like to do other things and listen. But obviously, FakoTube is popular. So, if you want to help out, don't forget fakeologist.com/donate. Most of the money is just going towards running the site. And FakoTube, I can just see now, is going to start consuming bigger pieces of money on top of the 120 US that I pay just to run the server. But all the duplication throughout the world is they seem to be charging. I'm not exactly sure how it works. There's a lot of caching involved, but as the weeks go by, I'm going to get a better idea of how much extra it's going to cost. If anyone wants to donate a few bucks here and there, fakeologist.com/donate. It is sponsored by Epic Cash and Uncle Vigilante. Uncle Epic Cash will be on tomorrow. But I'm not sure if above and beyond with the caching and with this CDN network what he's going to pay. So he's been, yeah, go ahead.
Well, the question I pose in all of this is fake. Mm. But that doesn't mean there aren't real consequences.
Well, that is the main thing. There are real consequences.
Right. And when they bring in a cast of thousands, only one person, it only takes one person to break a leg. I mean, when they made the film Ben-Hur, you want to talk about a cast of thousands. I mean, they really did fill those stands with thousands of spectators for the chariot race scene. For a long time, it was said that at least one person was killed filming that famous chariot race scene in Ben-Hur, doing the stunt. And I don't know if that's true or not. I really don't. But it doesn't seem implausible to me that when they run these large, complex psyops, that mishaps and accidents don't occur and that there aren't real consequences.
I agree with that. But the only thing we can sort of argue with and disprove and ask for evidence for are the people they say died. That's really, I think, the main idea. So did Anne Heche really die? And if so, who is this person that's getting up out of this body bag? And why is this person in a body bag and getting out of it if it is supposed to be?
That gets to the whole question of death fakers. Mm-hmm. The death fakers, it's like an institution in society now, death faking.
But it's still a psyop. It's the same guys bringing us the story.
Yeah, right. That's what I would say.
Yeah, it's a much smaller one, but there are bigger ones too. And there's big daddies every 20 years. And yeah, so.
Right. Well, you know, we could talk about Fukushima. And did anybody die there? You know, we're told that people immediately got horrible cancers.
Right.
And died. You know, so, but how do we know?
We don't know. I think we should agree that we just don't know because we're dealing with liars and we can't trust these perps. This is the main problem. This is what we're trying to tell everyone.
My contention is this. Mm-hmm. Yes, of course. It's much easier for them to simulate and brainwash than to actually send out troops and shoot people. But believe me, if that doesn't work, they won't hesitate to kill people. They won't. They won't hesitate to go kinetic because they do it. And this is the problem I have with John LeBon in Vietnam.
Okay, yeah.
You know, you're
catching everyone tonight in your web.
Well, try and tell those Vietnamese, every family in Vietnam lost somebody during that war there. Thousands did die. They bombed the hell out of North Vietnam. They mined Haiphong Harbor.
Right.
And they have sites all over the country where Agent Orange was sprayed all over the jungles. Gonna tell me that wasn't real?
Yeah. Well, wait. No. Don't cast your web too far. All right, Lynn. This was good. We've been going an hour and a quarter, so I appreciate you coming on and giving us some 9/11 background. And we'll just have you on in another month, and that's almost around the 9/11 time. So. I'm sure we can.
I'm going to go back and review that Rick Siegel.
Yes, go back to Clues Forum. I put the links on here.
Yeah, it's not enough for Simon Schatz to be saying that he's a shill or he's a perp or this or that. What's his motive? What did he stand to gain from it?
Well, the whole operation. The whole operation is a massive operation, as we know. And look at all the people in the COVID psyop. Because this is a new money reset as well.
Right,
so
right.
Yeah,
I agree.
But you were pretty close to it. It is pretty interesting, your perspective. But
To me, a controlled demolition is real.
Absolutely.
The dust and the rubble is there.
Yes.
There. So however they did it, it was kinetic.
Yes.
It was kinetic. Now, was there anybody left inside the building, or did they maybe...
I doubt it.
Dump a body. Well, one of the people, Father Michael Judge, who is a priest who allegedly died in one of the towers. And there's in 9/11 foreknowledge.
Yeah, they show
him being carried out, and some people deconstructed how fake they thought that was. But you know, nobody died, nobody cried. I mean, you don't think they wouldn't ritually sacrifice people if they could get away with it?
Yeah, maybe. And Dirty Benny also reminds us we have the forums, and I haven't looked at the forum today. Fakeologist forums, fakeologist.com/forums2, and hopefully we can get Lynn back in the forums and posting some links in there. She's always welcome, especially since you're in Facebook jail. You won't be in jail at the Facebook for at the Fakeologist forum, so maybe we can get you. We got to get you back in there.
I need a new machine, is what I need.
Yeah. Well, we gotta figure out how to get you back in. So let's work on that. Reset your password, maybe. Maybe that'll work.
Yeah. Well, no, it's not that kind of access. I can't even get to the page because.
What happens when you go to the page? What do you see on your screen?
It's I get a cipher error. It's unable to it doesn't have the certificate required to connect.
Try another browser. How about another browser? Have you tried the Brave browser?
I can't load any other browser. I got an obsolete machine. I've got the old processor. You realize that this machine I have, I purchased in like 2010.
Okay, well, go. Well, try and get another one then and get back on the forums. Apparently, Dirty Benny says you posted on Siegel in the forums.
I used to, yeah, I did.
Oh, right, you did.
I still have questions about
Psy Girl. Yeah, you posted a couple years ago.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, I see it now.
If it's all fake all the time, then we're not telling anybody what's real.
Right.
That's a problem. We're not telling anybody what's real.
All right.
So people say, okay, it's all fake. I don't have to pay any attention to it. Right? Yeah. There are no consequences. The price of gas isn't going up. The price of food isn't going up.
No, not everything's fake. That's real. I ate some real pork tenderloin tonight. Man, it was good. Expensive, but good. All right, Lynn. Thank you so much for joining, and we'll get you back in about a month.
All right. Take care.
All right. All the best.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. And, wow, good caller, Lynn. See you later, and thanks for joining. We'll be back tomorrow. We got another show with Uncle Vigilante. If you like to talk crypto, I do. I think it's interesting. May not be the solution right away, but it may be in the future. Thanks to the donor, Anonymous from Jacksonville. Thanks to Lynn. There'll be show notes, so you can go to her Facebook page. Thanks to everyone in the comments on fakotube.com and we're only on DLive. Well, thank you guys, and we'll see you tomorrow. Full week of guests, as I said earlier. Take care.